Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description. Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Lars.
And welcome back to Going In Raw Countout Best Worst 2017. We're doing a slew of these countouts to close out the year, Larson.
Yeah.
Telling you guys who had the best matches, best years, worst matches, worst years.
Well, most disappointing matches.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
We'll get to that one
later. Yeah, that's next weekend. Yesterday, we did top 10 wrestlers who had the best 2017. So now we have to do the other side of that coin.
Yeah.
The 10 wrestlers who had the worst 2017.
Who did not have a good year?
No.
2017 wasn't everybody's cup of tea, Larson.
No.
Yeah, especially for these 10 wrestlers. We'll get right into it. Number 10.
10.
Baron Corbin.
So, yeah, if you recall or if you watched, and if not, please do, our 10 wrestlers who are the best 2017, you would know that Baron Corbin placed 10 on that list as well.
And we specified in that episode, in that entry, that there were a lot of asterisks next to his accomplishments.
Yes, for asterisks. Every up, there was an associated down, essentially.
Let me ask you this. If you're a wrestler at his level, upper mid-card guy, heading into 2017, now we're at the end of 2017, is this a year that you're happy with? Is this a year that you look back on and say, okay, I'm really happy with the way this year turned out. If you can say yes or no to having this year, what do you say?
I would like to hope that Baron would view this year as a net positive. All the downs,
he should.
Yes, he should. While there was some downs, he had a couple career setbacks. At the end of it, he came out all right. None of the setbacks were so bad that it necessarily. You know, it's none of the setbacks were on par with Triple H getting punished for the curtain call.
Right, yeah, yeah.
It wasn't
yeah.
like he had to start all over again.
It was kind of comparable, but not to that degree. When Roman Reigns was punished and received a United States title push because of it,
yeah, I was
but he lost
the same
clean
thing.
To Finn. So it's definitely not on that level because they're not looking at Baron Corbin as the next face of the company.
No.
But with every setback they gave him, it was always kind of with the understanding that, hey, you're still a guy that we've invested a lot of time and money into and we still have a lot of
yes.
faith in.
Yes.
And so I think you can look back on 2017 and say, hey.
Hey.
I did good.
It was net positive 2017.
But let's take a look at the asterisks next to his accomplishments.
Before we start with the downs, we should mention that since his debut, he has been one of, if not the most improved wrestlers.
Oh yeah, for sure.
On the WWE roster. When he got called up, he was a contender for going in Raw Wrestler of the Year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's mostly because
that's
we thought
a good thing.
No, it's mostly because we thought he was kind of funny.
Yeah, exactly. I used to root for him because he was so kind of silly.
Yeah. But now he's a legitimate contender to not only the US title, but potentially the world title.
Oh, sure.
So things are looking up for Baron Corbin.
And the money and effort they've put into him, I think, has been worth it. I think
yes.
it's paid off. So we'll take a look at each of these sort of accomplishments with the Black Mirror version of
yes.
what happened.
Yes.
So, yes, he did win Money in the Bank 2017, but...
But then he lost his cash-in attempt in embarrassing fashion.
Yeah.
On the August 15th edition of SmackDown, he came down to the ring, I believe, to attack John Cena. He has his briefcase. He leaves the ring. He stops midway up the ramp, and it occurs to him, oh, Jinder's down the ring.
Hey.
He looks at his briefcase, goes back in. He is about to deliver, I'm sure, an end of days to Jinder Mahal, secure himself the WWE Championship. He is distracted by John Cena getting on the apron,
yeah.
goes to hit him, and I believe is rolled up by Jinder and loses his cash-in attempt.
First guy since Damian Sandow to lose, I believe, his cash-in attempt.
Yes.
Wasn't Mr. Kennedy levels of humiliating.
But it was pretty close.
It was pretty close. Here's a word of advice for the next Money in the Bank winner. If John Cena's in the state, don't try to cash in.
No.
All right? Do not try to cash in.
Because
when
you know
around.
Who Damian Sandow lost his cash-in
John Cena.
To? John Cena.
He did win the United States Championship.
Oh, hold on. You skipped over a very important thing.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm on the best.
So right after that, he got into a feud with John Cena.
Yeah.
Where both on the microphone and in the ring, he was consistently humiliated by John Cena.
Yeah, John Cena really just laughed him off.
Yes.
But at the same time, he was in there with John Cena. That's exactly. A high-profile match.
And the report started surfacing around all this that Baron was being punished for kind of his general backstage demeanor.
Yeah.
As some report said something about his Twitter activity. And might have been reason for punishment, but I think that was generally kind of poo-pooed by Dave Meltzer.
There was a meeting of some sort that apparently Baron Corbin had been piping up when he shouldn't have been.
Oh, about concussions,
about
concussions. There's a lot of potential reasons why he might have been punished that popped up in dirt sheets.
But it seems like that sort of thing, like his Twitter activity, for example, has taken a 180-degree turn from all that stuff.
Yeah.
He doesn't really talk crap on Twitter anymore. Yeah. You know, he's sort of, I don't know, he's a bit more of a positive guy on Twitter. So, I mean, I hope that he's taken a lot of these, you know, like anybody. I hope he takes the experiences he has in his career and he's used them to fuel a positive change.
Yeah, and learned from his mistakes.
Right.
Most recently, yeah, he did win the U.S. title from in a match, three-way match between himself, AJ Styles, Ty Dillinger. Won that title by pinning Ty. The following SmackDown, he pinned AJ Styles clean to retain that title. After that, he got into a program with Sin Cara and lost to Sin Cara multiple times by count out and DQ.
Yeah.
And just at Clash of Champions, lost the U.S. title to Dolph Ziggler. Mm-hmm. He ate the pin after taking a zigzag.
Yeah. So, we'll see what 2018 holds for Baron Corbin. I think that he's going to have a pretty good 2018. I think I predicted that he could win the WWE title in 2017. I'm going to make that same prediction for 2018.
Whoa, hold on to predictions. That's for another episode,
Oh,
Steve.
Goodness. Okay. Well, there's a preview for you. Number nine.
Nine.
Shinsuke Nakamura. I'm not gonna say the book has been written on this guy on main roster.
It hasn't, but 2017 was not a good year.
No,
for the King of Strong Style. Let's even go back before he debuted on main on the SmackDown after WrestleMania. He kicked off the year losing the NXT title to Bobby Roode at NXT TakeOver San Antonio.
In a great match,
fantastic match.
Yeah.
Lost the rematch at NXT TakeOver Orlando.
Mm-hmm. Another good match.
Another fantastic match. Called up to main. Interrupting a Miz segment that we thought foretold a great first feud.
That could have been really good.
You have the King of Strong Style against the Miz, who had been accused by Daniel Bryan of being a soft wrestler.
Yeah, right.
It seemed like the perfect first feud.
Writes itself.
Unfortunately, the Superstar Shakeup messed all that up. Miz got sent to Raw.
Yeah.
And what we got instead was a feud against Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah.
Based on the timing of pay-per-views, I guess, WWE didn't want Nakamura to wrestle on cable television until he had a pay-per-view match. I kind of, in one sense, I understand why. They're really building up the anticipation, make him feel important. At the same time, it did nothing to benefit him as a character. Oh, a terrible idea.
In retrospect, not a great idea.
And Dolph was not a good first opponent.
No, he was not.
In terms of building up the story, especially because apparently all their dark matches they were having after SmackDown were pretty good.
Yeah.
But what we finally saw at Backlash when Nakamura finally had his in-ring debut on the main roster was really lackluster.
Yeah, not good.
Really disappointing. They had a rematch a week or two later that was decent.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, the feud with Dolph, lame. Next, feud against Baron Corbin around the time of Money in the Bank. Better, still not great.
Yeah. They had one good match, I think.
Yeah.
And it was on SmackDown, not on the pay-per-view.
I think Nakamura's had, two good matches on main so far? His match against Cena was really good.
Yeah, his matches against Cena was
And they had a match against Orton that was pretty good.
Yeah.
His next feud was against Jinder Mahal. Mm-hmm. He won a match against Cena to become number one contender for WWE Championship.
Which, like you said, was a good really good match.
Really good match.
And a great moment for him.
Yes.
Hasn't all been bad.
Yeah. He had two shots at the WWE title against Jinder, lost both of them. Mm-hmm. The match at SummerSlam was really underwhelming.
Yeah, I know.
Zero drama.
Yeah.
The match at Hell in a Cell was slightly better.
Yeah.
But both times we thought, okay, Nakamura is going to be the man that'll end Jinder's championship reign, and it ended up not being the case.
Yeah, they just kept on chugging along with Jinder.
Mm-hmm.
So. I think the next couple months will really, really sort of determine what they're going to do with Nakamura. The Rumble's coming up. We both feel that he's probably a favorite to win that.
But he doesn't have any momentum going into it. That's the problem.
He doesn't, but that can kickstart it.
No, I know. 'Cause, I mean, right now he's kind of forming a tag team with Randy Orton. They've teamed up multiple times over the past month or so.
And he's kind of protected, although he took the first pin at Survivor Series.
But then at a Clash of Champions, he was kind of written out of the match early on, so Orton had to take the pin.
It'll take a Rumble win or just him challenging in New Japan fashion AJ Styles for the World Championship. Although I'm not sure really what grounds he'd be doing in that
I know. Well, on SmackDown, they don't operate by Kurt Angle's, win-loss record.
True, I know, exactly.
Criteria.
Thank goodness.
So it could simply take a challenge.
Yeah. So anyways, it has been it's been shaky for Shinsuke Nakamura.
Because he was the hottest thing in NXT.
I know.
We've been to a couple NXT shows. And NXT Brooklyn, too, I have never seen an audience that whose shirts were, 40%? 30% Nakamura?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah,
there was a lot of red Nakamura shirts that night. And when we were leaving that arena, the entire concourse was singing his theme song.
Yeah, man, he was hot stuff.
And then he comes to Maine and they just kind of blow it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we're sort of seeing the same thing with Bobby Roode right now, where people are very quickly not caring about him.
Although he got some good chance at a Clash of Champions.
Yeah, no, he did. I think people really want to get on board. They just need to give him something to do.
Exactly.
Number eight.
Eight.
Kurt Hawkins.
I mean, he hasn't won a match all year.
Yeah, as of December 2nd, his losing streak, which has been kind of built into not a story necessarily, but they're addressing it, stands at 140 matches.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's kind of a comedy guy at this point. It's never good to be. I mean, look, I'd rather take having a story than not having a story.
Yeah.
And they, whenever he comes out, they mention that story. So at any moment, they could run with that in some way. And it only takes one decent outing.
I know.
One decent thing to get hot.
I know.
So hopefully that'll be the case with him.
It's him losing all the time is not really the worst thing. I think it's far worse for him not to be on TV at all. There's storyline potential in his losing streak.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Because on the occasion that it ends, they could turn that into an interesting story.
Big deal, yeah.
But I think they've only mentioned it once or twice on TV. Mm-hmm. For a while, there was the Kurt Hawkins Superstar Academy, whatever he called it. And then later on, the History Machine.
Yeah.
And he's been on so infrequently that it never made an impact.
He could possibly... He's on Raw, right?
Yeah.
He could possibly benefit from being on SmackDown.
Although, well, that's where he was first. And then, he made his much ballyhooed debut in the pre-show for No Mercy 2016.
Yeah, all right. Never mind. He can't do anything. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, there's not a lot. There's a bunch of other people I'd rather see than him. But I always like to see guys, sort of come up that you didn't expect to see come up. So hopefully he'll be that guy for him. Number seven.
Seven.
Ty Dillinger.
Pretty much the high point of his 2017 occurred at the very beginning of the year when he debuted at the Royal Rumble, number 10 spot.
Yeah.
He had a decent showing in the Rumble.
Yeah, this has been a situation where... I don't know. I mean, we've talked endlessly about Ty Dillinger. The bottom line is, you said it with Kurt Hawkins, he's not on TV.
Yeah.
And I think people really want to root for Ty Dillinger.
Yes.
But he's one of those guys who, I don't know if it's just that his gimmick was too generic and the 10 count thing, the 10 chant is what was over as opposed to him truly being over.
Here's the thing. I think on main roster that was the case, but that was not the case in NXT.
No, I agree with you completely. But it's not like anybody was really chomping at the bit to see Ty Dillinger on the main roster. You and I both wanted to see him complete his story arc on NXT.
And I think had that happened, then he could have went to the main roster with some serious momentum.
Yeah, there was the potential there. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But instead, he got brought up to main full-time, the SmackDown after Mania, beat Kurt Hawkins in his match there. And since then, has been on TV really infrequently. He tagged with Sami Zayn a couple times.
He was inserted into the United States title scene.
And the crowd was starting to get behind him. There's a couple moments where the crowd was getting behind him.
The people want to get behind him.
They want to like Ty Dillinger.
I know. I think it's one of those things where...
It feels like one of those situations where they think, okay, well, we have a role we need to fill. We think Ty will fill that role well. And that's it.
And that role doesn't really appear on TV very often.
No, it's more of a house show type thing.
And I think maybe back when they were a bit looser with, back in the Attitude Era, it was, well, this guy is getting himself over. Or this guy is getting hot. Let's roll with him and see where we can go.
Yeah.
A guy like Ty Dillinger these days, that might have worked for him back then. These days, it's more like, well, you have your role. this is the ceiling we see for you.
Yeah, and that's pretty much it.
And that's pretty much it. I would love for him. I mean, it's the same thing like with Damian Sandow. You know, I felt that he was the supreme example of man.
Oh, this wasted potential.
If you really, this guy was over.
Mm-hmm.
The crowd was ready for him, and they just saw a certain role for him, and they didn't want to get out of that box. And that was so frustrating.
Yep.
With Ty Dillinger, I don't think that he has the same ceiling that Damian Sandow did, but he certainly has a higher ceiling than what he's got now, which is not even being on TV.
Yes.
So I would love to see more Ty Dillinger. I mean, you can put him in the same level as you can also put like Mike Kanellis here.
Yeah.
Mike Bennett, a guy who came up and a lot of people thought, oh my God, you know, they signed Mike Bennett and Marie Kanellis. Let's see what they can do, because a lot of people really liked his work in TNA. And then they came on, bypassed NXT. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure because Marie Kanellis already had legacy. They came up and they had a gimmick that was unique. And there was like, you know, the loving couple.
Yeah, the power of love.
The power of love. And then they just completely dropped it. I know he went through some rehab stuff.
Yeah.
And then she got pregnant.
Yeah.
And now he's doing dark matches.
Yeah.
You know, kind of in the same level as Ty Dillinger.
Yeah.
So
totally.
Number six.
Six.
Bayley.
The first quarter of the year for Bayley wasn't too bad. She mm-hmm. was the Raw Women's Champion, retained that title at WrestleMania 33.
Yeah. Yeah.
But after that is when things started going south.
Yeah, when they put her up there with Alexa Bliss, and the only thing they can come up with was like a Mean Girls angle.
Yes. Well, then they kind of, you know, like portrayed Bayley as this kind of...
Yeah, it was weird.
Essentially like a child.
Yeah, like her growth was stunted mentally or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird.
So she lost to Alexa Bliss at Payback, which was in San Jose, Bayley's hometown.
Yeah.
And then after that, there was the Bayley, This Is Your Life segment,
which is
definitely a contender for worst segment of the year.
Worst segment of the year. The crowd was completely bored with it. Alexa Bliss couldn't even get into it. It was excruciatingly long and bad and boring and stupid. Every bad thing, that was that. Then they had her go to Extreme Rules in a kendo on a stick match against Alexa Bliss. And they did this weird angle
kendo
where...
kendo stick on a pole match, that's what I should say.
Kendo stick on a pole match, thank you. And they did this weird thing where, oh, Bayley, she was too sheepish to get extreme. She couldn't get extreme. I'm like, wait a second. In NXT, Bayley was an ass kicker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like they nobody has been written as poorly and as off the mark as Bayley.
Yeah. And when they seemed like they were going to finally finish that narrative and have Bayley finally beat Alexa at SummerSlam that year, they got the wheels in motion. It seemed like it was heading in the right direction. Maybe they mm-hmm. they kind of distanced themselves from the mean girl thing.
Yeah.
And Bayley got hurt her shoulder in a match against Nia Jax on the July 31st edition of Raw.
Mm-hmm.
And she was out of action for a couple months. Missed her match at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
Returned for a match at No Mercy. I think it was a 4-way match against Bliss. Mm-hmm. Took the pin. Lost. She's been out of the title picture ever since.
Yeah.
You know, she's just been kind of doing some occasional storyline stuff with Sasha Banks.
You know, here's one tact you might be able to take with Bayley. For a while there, she was getting booed.
Yeah, I know.
And she's not really getting booed anymore
because
she hasn't been in anything substantial enough for people to be revolting against. So maybe this is, and this is, I know I'm reaching here because I don't really think the WWE does this. But maybe this is kind of a reset button for Bayley.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they're just holding back. They book her strong still.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just keeping her out of any obvious storylines until it's been completely reset. And then they can do something substantial with her again. I was actually really looking forward. I was really hoping that they would pull the trigger or have the horsewoman versus horsewoman thing worked. I really like the visuals from the Mae Young Classic where three of the four WWE horsewomen were standing tall against the MMA horsewomen.
Yeah.
I think when you look at them all collectively, it's like, oh man, they're kind of cool. You know, when you're in like a pack like that,
yeah,
you look kind of cooler.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was really hoping they'd do something that sort of brand transcended, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, they didn't, because I think Bayley could have had a kind of an interesting role in that. But you know, evidently they're not going that route.
Doesn't seem like it. No.
Yeah. So I don't know. I do think that out of a lot of people on this list, I mean, you can say the same thing with Shinsuke. I think things things can be turned around really quick with Shinsuke.
It would be real easy to right the ship with both Nakamura
I think that's
and Bayley.
Yeah, with Bayley, honestly, simpler is better with her. You know?
Yeah, I agree. I think simpler is better, and also just takes one decent storyline. Mm-hmm. And she can be a huge moneymaker.
Stay away from the mean girl stuff. Yeah. Stay away from the stuff that just seems so completely off the mark. It's like, that's just not her who her character is. Like,
no. And we said this before. It seemed like a lot of NXT call-ups, when they get called up, it just feels like creative or probably Vince had never seen what that wrestler done in NXT.
Yeah.
I mean, in NXT, they branded Shinsuke perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
King of Strong style.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't talk a lot, but when he did, it meant something. Apart from that, he just beat people up.
Yeah,
and it
exactly.
was great.
Yeah.
He was so charismatic that it didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he got brought up to Maine, they started doing the artist thing. And I don't know, there's too many backstage segments with him trying to be, you know, where there was supposed to be jokey and funny.
Yeah.
No. Same with Bayley. Bayley, her character in NXT had a sense of innocence about her, mm-hmm. but there's nothing childlike about her.
My biggest concern right now is Aleister Black going to SmackDown. Mm-hmm. If you plunk Aleister Black on Raw and put him immediately in the scene with Braun, Roman, Joe,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe even Finn, perhaps, then I think you'll be totally fine.
Yeah.
Because you don't see a lot of backstage segments where they're joking.
No.
When Samoa Joe's backstage, they're all either yelling at Kurt Angle or yelling at each other. And that kind of backstage stuff really works.
Mm-hmm.
They keep the backstage silliness to guys like Titus Worldwide, you know, and then Dana Brooke, the club, stuff like that. But the guys who are supposed to be serious
are serious.
They're kept serious.
Yes.
When you have Shinsuke Nakamura acting like a fool, basically, or just being jokey, man, that stuff does not work. It totally doesn't work. I don't know why they think it would.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Number five.
Five.
Big Cass.
Yeah. Weird. They didn't have, I mean, him and Enzo were kind of, their popularity, I mean, their merch sales were still really good,
mm-hmm.
but there was a bit of a backlash happening against Enzo.
Yeah.
He was starting to get some boos. And so they decided to break up after a really lame storyline about who jumped Enzo, who beat up Enzo, who beat up Cass, involving the Big Show.
Mm-hmm.
It was finally revealed on the June 19th episode of Raw that Cass was behind the attacks, and he broke up with Enzo, and it seemed completely and totally premature. They needed to wait at least another year, at least one tag title reign, before that story really felt like it had enough heft to mean something.
They needed you're exactly right. They needed a tag title reign. They needed a story that came out of their tag title reign for this to make any semblance of sense. We're supposed to believe that Big Cass and Enzo have been friends for years and years and years, and just now Cass is getting annoyed with Enzo's personality. Mm-hmm. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
No.
You know, this should be that storyline should have been success and failure based.
Yes.
You're holding me back. And it really wasn't that. It was all I hear every day.
Well, Cass did
talking.
Mention that he felt like Enzo was dead weight. Because that's how their matches have been structured since their NXT days, where Enzo would be in there, get beat up.
Yeah, but so much of it was personality-based.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you're right, but they should have illustrated that in practice, not just relied on, oh, this is what's happened in the past. So, I don't know. I thought it was kind of interesting because Cass, when was he involved in that number one contendership match?
That was in 2016.
That was in 2016, man. And I really wonder what would have happened if they would have continued to build Cass sort of that way and have Enzo be his manager.
I know.
And dialed back Enzo just a little bit. Like, I feel like there was a really great recipe there for Cass to be a great singles wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, man, he was getting heat. They changed his theme song
three
awful. Times,
yeah,
and every
all
time
bad.
It was bad.
And he seemed uncomfortable in the role.
Yeah.
There was maybe a couple promos that were effective, heel promos that were effective.
When Enzo was injured because of the concussion, and they had Cass go out there and cut some promos, they were very, because they were face promos.
Yeah.
They were very charming, not because they were so polished, because they seemed sincere.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh, wow, this guy, he actually, for as big a monster kind of looking guy he is, he seemed like a dude with a big heart. And that was kind mm-hmm. of Cass's thing always. And it just, you know, the guy who has the noisy friend who you always sort of like, you know, it's like, well, I tolerate this guy because I know, you know, he's got my back and we go back a ways. Yeah. People like Cass. People don't want to not like him.
Yeah.
So
and
hopefully
then
he would come out
and drop a heel promo. You can literally see the nerves.
Yeah, yeah.
You can
I know.
See him nervous.
Oh, it was terrible. I know.
But yeah, hopefully when he comes back, they'll adjust course and do something more befitting of his personality.
It would be difficult for me to believe that they would bring him back as a heel.
I know.
Still.
He does not,
and he's not going to be the guy who can cut a heel promo when he comes back to a face reception and get people hating him again the way they want.
Yeah,
to.
I know. So after that, he had a couple of not very good feuds against Enzo and the Big Show, kind of happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
There was that shark cage match at SummerSlam, I believe.
It was more fun than I thought it was.
Yeah, it was. But then he ended up tearing his ACL the day after SummerSlam in a match against Enzo in a street fight.
Yeah.
Took a nasty spill over the top rope, tore up his knee, and has been out of action ever since.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He did, if I recall correctly, buy a house with Carmella, though. Mm-hmm. So maybe on a personal level, things are going great for
him.
But,
yes.
But hopefully, I mean, he's a young dude. Hopefully his career will pick right back
up. Yeah, he should be back early next year. February or March.
When he August 21st, so that was right after SummerSlam.
The day after SummerSlam, yeah.
It's been a really good time for big men on Raw since then.
Yes.
Especially since then.
Yes.
So hopefully we'll see him back. I mean, maybe him and Braun can have something really nice when he comes back, you know. So I don't know, it'd be fun. Number four.
Four.
Emma. Jeez, where to begin?
Well, we have to begin in late 2016, Steve, when WWE started promoting Emelina.
Oh, this is so bad.
Yeah. Every week there'd be a vignette that aired promoting the transformation of Emma into Emelina, and that continued.
It was just a bunch.
Into 2017,
it was just a bunch of like model-esque bikini shots.
Yeah.
Of Emma with some like jazzy music. I think.
Yeah, with a little bit of a beat to it.
Yeah.
And at one point, late last year, December 12th. They announced she would debut on Raw, but that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
Early this year, there was word that, I think specifically from the Wrestling Observer himself, Dave Meltzer, that Emelina's debut, or lack thereof, had become a running joke backstage in creative.
Sort of, there was zero plan for it. They just kept on running these vignettes because it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
Which it never was.
And
it was a waste of time.
Yeah, I know, it was an absolute waste of time. 17 weeks after the very first Emelina video package aired, she finally debuted February 13th on Raw, only to completely crap on the entire thing, saying, well, you've seen Emelina, now watch the transformation of Emelina into Emma.
Yeah, the word backstage was that when they would try to do this in rehearsals, either she wasn't giving her all or she just wasn't figuring out what this Emelina thing.
Or she might not have been a good fit.
And wasn't the Emelina thing supposed to be kind of a diva throwback to like the mid-aughts?
Yeah.
Like a
or even Attitude Era type thing. Yeah.
Which, I don't know. I mean, if they had done that in kind of a meta way with sort of, tongue-in-cheek. Because, there wasn't a lot of, sort of great wrestling back then, and Emma was a really good wrestler.
Yeah, she is a good wrestler.
So if they were taking that tact with it, I mean, that's one thing. But if she wasn't comfortable with it, then you shouldn't be shoehorning her into that.
Exactly.
And if it doesn't work, you should just be professional about it and just move on and find something that does work for her.
Yes.
Sorry. So anyway, she came back on the Raw after Mania in her previous gimmick, which was...
Mean Emma.
She injured her shoulder about a month later, missed about a month of action.
She was kind of involved in kind of the periphery of the Raw Women's title scene for a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Until she won an opportunity to face Asuka at TLC and Asuka's main roster debut.
Yeah, she was trying to get over this whole hashtag. They were doing like a social media angle with her.
Yeah, where
like,
she was saying she started the Women's Revolution. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And so I thought that, hey, maybe that might be something that they're going to chew on. They're going to give her like a mini push, something like that. She ended up losing to Asuka in her debut main roster. I'm sorry, in Asuka's main roster match.
Yeah. And then the rematch the following night on Raw, I believe.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then less than a week later, she was released.
Now, there was a rumor that her release was mainly used, was like an example to the women's division because of something. And now I forget what it was. It wasn't Nia Jax walking out. I thought it was something like people griping about creative. So they let go of Emma. I thought I read that rumor somewhere. Yeah. That's a bummer.
Yeah.
If that is the case.
Yeah, if true. That's...
Because she was very vocal on Twitter about her lot on Raw.
Yeah.
And, you never know how much of that is in character, is approved, if they're allowed to say stuff like that or not.
Yeah.
So you just, you never know. So, anyways, Emma didn't have a great 2017, but hopefully...
No.
Oh, here we go. What is this? Oh, SI. This is extra mustard, I think. It said Emma created just enough enemies on the writing staff, which she exacerbated from the way she voiced her opinion on Twitter. The doors remain open for a return,
but
her
exit
from the company is viewed by some as addition by subtraction in the locker room. Okay, so that's what it was. So, yeah, that's a bummer.
It is.
Anyways. Number three!
Three.
The Revival!
They actually had a very good start to 2017, putting on great matches at both NXT TakeOver San Antonio and NXT TakeOver Orlando.
That one of the most creative
tag matches.
One of the most creative tag teams in NXT.
Yep.
And they were an absolute joy to watch in their matches against Authors of Pain, DIY. Yep. Just an absolute joy to watch. They debuted on the Raw after Mania. They defeated the New Day, so that's a huge rub right there.
Oh, sorry. They didn't have a match at TakeOver San Antonio. My bad. It was Orlando.
Okay. Well, in any event, they had a lot of cool TakeOver matches a lot of cool tag team matches. Dash Wilder broke his jaw at an NXT live event on April 14th.
So like 2 weeks after they made their main roster debut.
Still in NXT.
Well, they're kind of doing their farewell tour.
I know.
Their main roster debut was great. They debuted against the New Day and beat them.
I already mentioned that
you
were doing that.
Sorry. That was great.
Yeah, that was great.
But yeah, then about 2 weeks later, Wilder busted his jaw, and he was out of action for
3 months.
3 months.
Man.
And then they were part of the Cass Enzo storyline, who attacked Enzo. They were kind of lurking around backstage at various points throughout
they were
that.
The red herring, is that right?
Yeah, I think so. And they returned to the ring July 10th, involved in the storyline with the Hardys and the Club and Sheamus and Cesaro, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then shortly after that, Scott Dawson tore his bicep.
Yeah.
So it seemed like it's just since they got brought up to the main roster, it's just false start.
It's been an absolute bummer.
They just returned this past episode of Raw and defeated Slater and Rhino.
Mm-hmm.
So here's hoping they can stay healthy. Because when healthy, they are one of the best tag teams
absolutely
on the planet.
They just, I just fear like one more injury and
they're going to be on main event all the time.
I think, they need to stay healthy. And I know that's wrestling is really hard on the body and it's not easy. It takes just one wrong move, one wrong step.
So much is outside of your hands.
Mm hmm. So, ugh, goodness gracious. Number two. Alberto El Patron, a.k.a. Alberto Del Rio.
Yeah, you're the Impact
aficionado, expert.
Between the two of us. So you'll probably know more about his tenure there than I do. But he debuted on the March 2nd episode of Impact.
Yeah.
And when they taped it initially, they got his name wrong on his video package.
Yeah, so he actually, when he debuted... he actually had a pretty welcome response from the crowd. Unfortunately, whoever put together his video packaging, which is just his name.
Yeah.
They got his name wrong. I believe it was Alberto Del Patron, not Alberto El Patron.
Yeah.
So it was instead of Alberto the Boss, it was Alberto of the Boss. Not good.
Not right.
No, not correct at all. But anyways,
didn't they have to reshoot his debut and the crowd didn't react the same?
Right. And that's exactly what happened. Yeah. So anyways, he had a initial successful run in Impact Wrestling to kick things off. He beat Lashley for the title,
The
night of his debut,
but then vacated it because he won in controversial fashion.
Yeah. They were doing the thing. You know, it's funny, like no matter who's in charge of Impact, they always do traditional weird, wonky TNA finishes and reversals. They're just stuck in the, I guess, I don't know if you want to call it Vince Russo, Dixie Carter way of doing things. Because even to this day, with like a brand new creative structure, they still do. Like if you look at, what was it, the last one, Bound for Glory, you know, Alberto El Patron came in the main event for your biggest title, your world title, and we had a wonky finish. And it's like, no, man, you got to give us some clean finishes.
Yeah, especially on one of your major shows.
On your WrestleMania, basically.
Yeah, I know.
So anyways, that led to him facing off against Lashley at SummerSlam. At Slammiversary to unify the Global Force Wrestling and Impact titles, but was stripped of the title due to an airport incident with Paige and suspended indefinitely. I mean, you know, if it wasn't that, there was his activity on Periscope, which is like a weird platform to be... You know, giving these inebriated rants against Triple H and WWE. you know, there's all this sort of, I mean, there's nothing, I don't think, substantial about the allegations that have been levied towards him. So I'm not going to speak on that beyond like the tapes that we heard from the airport incident. Obviously, he had some sort of tumultuous relationship with Paige. Mm-hmm. Other people have said it's been worse than that, including her own family. Who knows what the truth is? But it's just been one incident seemingly after another. It's bizarre to me that...
Yeah, it seems for like the last year and a half has been
Right, exactly, yeah.
Getting in fights, having altercations outside of his restaurant.
Right, yeah.
Back to last year.
Yeah, that's right. There's all sorts of weird stuff happening. And he seemed to be dragging Paige kind of down with him. Paige is doing really great work in the WWE right now upon her return. And, you know, I'm not sure it's coincidental that they've broken up prior to her coming back.
Yeah.
And it seems to be on amicable terms. Yeah. I mean, you know, he's got his family and she's going to be traveling a lot. And, you know, that's how that is. But, I mean, you know, he's back kind of towards the main event-ish scene on Impact, but he's not moving ratings. It's still... We've had this debate on, you know, various episodes of Going in Raw where we talk about, is Impact able to be saved? Can they ever turn around?
Yeah, I know.
And I think that there are possibilities that aren't outside of the realm of reality where they could. The odds are probably stacked against them, but I can tell you that having Alberto El Patron in your main event scene isn't one of them.
Yeah.
I just don't think that he moves ratings at all.
No, he doesn't.
So, yeah, I don't know. He came back at Bound for Glory. He gave this really long, rambling promo about that was kind of heelish, but it was more heelish towards the front office of Impact Wrestling. But that had changed in his absence.
Yeah.
Because Jeff Jarrett, who could have been on this list if he was actually like really wrestling.
Yeah.
Was, you know, the lead creative when he was there, and then he was gone by the time he came back. So I'm not sure who he's railing against. So, yeah, I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if 2018 he picked up the Impact World title again. Wouldn't surprise me if he didn't, if he was gone from the company. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
But it wasn't a great year for Alberto El Patron in 2017, tell you that much.
No.
Number one. Bray Wyatt. For all the bad years that everybody's had, Bray Wyatt was literally WWE champion during 2017, and he still had the worst 2017.
Yeah, he did. He did win the WWE title at Elimination Chamber. But he was a transitional champion.
Yeah.
The point of it was to put the belt eventually on Randy Orton.
Which is still complete. I have no idea.
Especially considering what happened afterwards.
I know.
Because Orton does end up being a transitional champion for Jinder Mahal.
I know. Why didn't they just go straight from Bray? Like, I don't know. I do not know what the point of putting the belt on Randy Orton was.
Well, I imagine the...
It's 2017!
I imagine the initial plan was to put the belt on Orton, have him have a longer reign, and they decided to go with Jinder, and that probably interrupted whatever plans they might have with Randy Orton.
That makes even less sense, though. I mean,
no, I know.
What you're saying makes sense in terms of what we know about the WWE, but even Randy Orton has admitted that he is bored being a babyface.
Yeah.
Then what is this?
Yeah.
I mean, they had... Look, I was a fan of the House of Horrors match.
But the match at WrestleMania was awful. Awful.
It was bad.
It was awful.
I still say, hey, you know what? I still say that the projection on the mat was better than a straight-up match.
No, I agree, but the projections on the match on the mat... really didn't amount to anything.
Oh, it was terrible.
If that was the starting point for other stuff,
I know.
But just because you project like a bunch of flies or whatever it was on the mat,
I think
doesn't mean anything.
When there is a, I think our point with putting him at number one is
this year was a culmination of all the wasted potential of Bray Wyatt.
When it's so much worse to have something so special and see it get so misused
consistently,
as opposed to a guy like Ty Dillinger, who just isn't on TV. A guy like Curt Hawkins, who has a massive losing streak. Bray Wyatt, they had, if you want to say, they had the whole world in their hands with Bray Wyatt, and they elected to take the what they think is the safe route with boring babyface Randy Orton, and had him burn down Bray Wyatt's house, had him sully, you know, Sister Abigail, her remains apparently, And then Bray Wyatt has the powers of Satan. And what does he do with the powers of Satan? He projects some worms on the mat at WrestleMania. And then Randy Orton goes over anyways.
Yeah.
I don't get that at all. I don't get what the point of that was. And it bums me out because now you look at Bray Wyatt and he's in something that could potentially be a lot of fun with Matt Hardy. And Bray Wyatt looks checked out.
Yeah, for the most part.
At this point, he looks totally checked out. He lost the Wyatt family, which I don't get it, man. The Wyatt family, there was so much money in that.
I know. At every point, it seems like when they have a choice to make whether to build up Bray Wyatt into a massive star or keep him in his role, they always elect to keep him in his role.
I know.
Even him winning the title was just, it was to facilitate another Randy Orton push.
People marked out. So remember when Bray walked up, when Triple H had the title?
And he touched
And he touched
and
it.
And they marked out massively for it.
Right. And then when they were starting, they started to book the Sister Abigail super strong. And it like beat Cena. And then he ended up winning the title. People marked out big time for that. And then they did nothing. They did the Randy Orton thing, and there was some stuff that could have been really, really cool. Yep. And then once again, the story of Bray Wyatt is they dropped the ball because they cannot stand changing the status quo when it comes to Bray Wyatt. They cannot stand taking a leap, taking a creative jump. They just have him that same role where he comes out with the microphone or he's in the bowels of the arena and he says a bunch of gibberish and nobody cares.
Yeah.
So it's
imagine the feud with Orton if Orton's axe burning down the compound were, as I interpreted them to be, a heel move.
Yeah.
It was a double turn. Orton turns heel in an effort to take over the Wyatt family for himself, and Bray has a face turn.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if that dynamic alone had changed.
Yeah.
At least then, if Orton wins, it's not boring face Orton.
I know.
And then it gives something for Bray to work with afterwards. Mm-hmm. He really has to evaluate who and what he is.
Yeah.
But instead, after the House of Horrors, Wyatt gets shipped to Raw and the Superstar Shakeup, and it seemed like whatever happened on SmackDown was fan fiction.
Yeah, I know.
They don't address it at all.
No.
And then he's in a couple of half-baked feuds with, like, Rollins, I think. And maybe
Balor, they did the weird. And they were going to do the Sister Abigail thing, and that looked hokey as crap. Yeah. No, I don't know. I agree, man. Like, if Orton, if they had done something, look, they were already going down the supernatural route with the whole Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt thing. They had Randy Orton do some I-beams or some crap like that. There was a teleportation going on.
I think he teleported once.
Yeah. If they had Randy Orton strip Bray Wyatt of his powers and, like you said, did a double turn thing, man, they could have built something really, really interesting there.
And I know.
Seen Bray Wyatt it's funny. Like, I'm totally okay with using Randy Orton, putting the title on Randy Orton for a purpose, but there was zero purpose to it. They didn't do anything interesting with it, and even Randy Orton didn't seem interested in it.
Yeah.
It's like, I actually really enjoy Randy Orton's work when he's invested in something.
Yeah, when he's motivated, he can be pretty good.
And for a spell, it seemed like he was invested in the Bray Wyatt
thing. Oh, yeah.
And they did that really weak turn when he turned on Bray and, you know, went face or whatever, and he burned down his house.
Yeah.
It was so weak, and there was zero motivation there. It was like, oh, I beat you from the inside. I'm like, that was lame.
Well, it was rushed.
Yeah, it was so rushed.
It was like they took out half the second act.
They took out, like, yeah, exactly. They took out, like, 3 weeks of storytelling there and rushed right to the end.
And then to depict what Orton did as a face move still boggles my mind.
It's still weird. Burning down a person's house is never, like, a face thing.
Shouldn't be.
Unless you're Stone Cold Steve Austin and the house is Brian Pillman. Anyways. So, yeah, there you go, Bray Wyatt. Had the worst 2017. Let us know what you guys think about wrestlers who had bad years.
Yes.
And here's a toast to wrestlers, all these guys. Hopefully they'll have a better 2018.
My jar is empty.
Till next time, talk to you guys later.
Bye.